welcome to the Poem of the Week. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Hey, Mark, you old biker and golfer, you. How are you?
Oh, well, I still have both ACLs, thank you. Missing a meniscus and a quad tendon, but otherwise, the ACLs are still there.
Great. We're going to talk about ACLs this morning. It is the BMJ, published this year in 2013. The article begins on page 346. Just by way of background, the ACL is an important stabilizing ligament of the knee. Unfortunately, it's frequently injured. In fact, there are about 200,000 ACL ruptures in the U.S. Each and every year. The primary function of this thing called the ACL, the anterior cruciate ligament, is to control anterior translation of the tibia. The anterior cruciate ligament is also the most common injured knee ligament in the body. A great majority of these tears occur from non-contact athletic sports. In fact, according to the group that keeps track of these kind of things, football players are the ones that sustain the greatest number of tears, about half of all tears, but female gymnasts sustain the highest rate of injuries. But once one of these things does tear in a young adult, is rehab plus early construction better than just delayed construction? This was a topic of this particular study in the BMJ. Mark, what did they find?
Yeah, this is a 5-year follow-up of a study initially reported in 2010. They took 141 patients who were mostly young athletes who had an ACL injury. Those who had a total collateral ligament rupture and full thickness cartilage lesion were excluded. They presumably went straight to surgery. And then they randomized them to either delayed reconstruction, so let's try rehab, physical therapy, avoid reconstructive surgery if we can, or immediate reconstruction. Of the 141 who were initially randomized, 20 were excluded because it turned out that they had either an intact ACL on MRI, so they thought they had an injury but they didn't, or they had really extensive meniscal injury that was felt to require surgery. So all of those assigned to delayed reconstruction, of those assigned to delayed reconstruction, about half eventually underwent surgery, but that means half did not. Knee stability was better with immediate reconstruction, but that is kind of a disease outcome. It actually didn't translate into any improved functional or pain-related outcomes. The changes in the knee injury, the osteoarthritis outcome scores, activity scales, overall health assessments, how the knee looked on x-ray, all of those were the same between groups. There was no difference down the road in over 5 years in the number of patients who had to have meniscal surgery either. So the basic bottom line here is that immediate reconstruction didn't offer any long-term benefit over waiting and seeing how they do with physical therapy and rehab and strengthening, realizing that about half of these active young athletes may eventually require reconstructive surgery.
The average age in the sample was young, is 26. Do you think you can extrapolate and say that those same findings would hold for 35, 40, 45, 50-year-olds as well?
You know, I would think this is actually a higher-risk group. They're going to be more active. These are athletes.
Right.
So if you are going to extrapolate it, you know, I would guess that that you'd have similar, even better outcomes for older, less active adults, assuming that they can participate fully with the rehab program. You know, we're seeing more of these studies that not all meniscal tears need to be fixed, not all ligament ruptures need to be fixed, and also studies that are showing that certainly by middle age, if you start doing MRIs on everybody's knees, you're going to find a lot of meniscal tears. And a lot of those people aren't symptomatic and probably don't need it repaired. So, and it may be that sometimes when there's an injury and they see a meniscal tear, that may be an incidental finding. So I think we're learning to hopefully be a little more circumspect in terms of rushing into surgical repair and maybe more willing to give rehab some time to work, realizing that, you know, it's not going to work for everybody, and some folks are going to certainly need surgery.
You and other members of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force and AHRQ and the PCORI group, et cetera, are really driving a lot of this research that are looking at, you know, does something work? And just because we have it available doesn't mean that we should be using it. And even if we use it, are there subgroups of people for whom it really will benefit more than others? And, you know, it's an exciting time in medicine. My life is medical education, and it really makes us need to think about how we're teaching in medical school and residency so that we're able to ask these questions and not just jump on something being available and just doing it.
Yeah, hopefully we can, in our education, focus a little more on thinking critically and a little less on just stuffing facts in the brain. Right. You know, when I look at the current medical curriculum, and, you know, there's certainly been a large move toward thinking critically, thinking about evidence, weighing evidence, but, you know, there's still a lot of fact stuffing going on, and it'll be interesting to see how that evolves as we now have our little fact machines that we carry in our pocket. You know, can we begin to get away from that a little bit?
We'll talk with you again next week. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Talk to you then.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.